right now. It's time for Cofield & Company's Legal Insider, Justin Watkins, to present the facts. Only on Cofield & Company.
All right, rolling into the 4 o'clock hour. So, Adam, did you see the news with this latest round of court cases, sentencing with Felicity Huffman?
She's going to the slammer for a long time, Steve. She's going to be locked up.
Utterly ridiculous. She paid $15,000. Her daughter's SAT score was rigged. 14 days in jail. And as a lot of people joked last week when this came down, I mean, are you eligible for good behavior? Like, you get out in seven?
Like,
seriously?
Two or three, probably. I bet she doesn't do more than 4 days.
What a joke.
Yeah. It's insane. And, listen, I don't know. I have no idea what the precedent is and what prior, you know, cases you would use, because I don't know that they even have a whole lot of these kind of cases on record to base off of. But it just feels like what you see some other people go to jail for and what you see people in jail for a long time for compared to this, like, this should be worse. It should. Because it is screwing over so many people in a time when you don't have to. It's just being brazen about it.
Yeah. You're rich. You're obnoxious. You get anything you want. And you believe your kids should get anything they want, even if they're lazy or just stupid and can't get into a good school.
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
And you're right. How many kids who don't have money want to get into that school get denied? And let me tell you, this investigation, I think, is the tip of the iceberg. I think this stuff is going. I mean, we already know there's legacy buys where people are buying freaking buildings. But then there's, like, that's like the super rich. Then there's just the rich who apparently are cheating on the SAT, getting scholarships for sports that their kids don't even participate in, straight payoffs to coaches, 14 days for Felicity Huffman. All right, Justin Watkins is on the horn with us on this Wednesday. Justin, what do you think of this? I guess this sounds about normal, but, man, it just doesn't seem fair with people like Felicity Huffman buying their kid, you know, cheating on the SAT, getting just 14 days in jail.
I agree. Yeah, it doesn't have a good face on it. It hopefully, and it's already started kind of a conversation on criminal justice reform and sentencing reform. And you see all over Twitter, everybody saying 14 days for this, but, you know, so-and-so got 2 years for this, or 20 years for, you know, the third conviction for a marijuana joint, which is now legal, and they're in prison for 20 years. Like, what's worse? So I think this was an opportunity sort of missed to indicate how serious this is. It will be taken. And I kind of feel like they whiffed on it. I mean, it is sort of typical in these sort of situations, but this was higher profile, and I was hoping to see something more significant than this.
Well, if we're working toward it, like, what would the next step be toward just some balance and some fairness? Because it from the outside, I mean, you already kind of said it, but it looks like, okay, rich people do something bad, no big deal. Poor people steal food for their family and they end up in jail for, you know, a year or 2 years, or just, you know, crazy kind of nonsense. So I guess, what is the next step and what can people do?
Well, I mean, what ultimately what this comes down to, and this isn't the greatest answer in the world, but it's all about local and state elections, which, typically speaking, across the country, is the lowest voter turnout, least researched votes people make. And it is statewide and countywide in some cases, in which sentences are instilled, sentencing guidelines. And at least here in the state of Nevada, we elect our judges. And so judges, when they have the discretion to sentence, if you feel like they're too harsh on certain crimes and weak on others, then you vote them out. But the reality of it is that that's not at the forefront of what most people think about when they vote.
So we're all keeping an eye on what's going to happen to Lori Loughlin, her and her Massimo husband, they bought their daughters into school. I think people know the one who's who got into USC the most. They both get into USC? Adam, you remember?
I thought so.
But Lori Loughlin, we're talking $500,000. I mean, that's got to catch the attention, right, of a judge versus $15,000 by Felicity Huffman?
Yes.
Okay.
I would expect that any sentencing would be more significant than 14 days.
I'm going to throw something out, and I have no idea if a judge could do anything. I don't know if it could be entered into the case. Olivia Jade, the really obnoxious daughter, who obviously is a moron and can't go to USC, is sort of taking the attitude like, we're getting screwed over. How dare you do this to my mother? She just pulled down an Instagram post that her lawyers asked her to pull months ago, where it's got a caption, and then she's got two middle fingers up there defending her mother. Could that ever enter into the case?
No.
Really?
Yeah,
so this kid could be as obnoxious as she wants and basically admit, you know what, I don't care, I'm not afraid, screw the system, screw what's fair.
I mean, I shouldn't say it's completely irrelevant, but as to whether or not there's like a conviction, then the answer would be no. But in a sentencing, you know, a judge within their discretion can say, you know, whether or not they've shown remorse, contrition, weighs into it. I personally don't like that aspect of sentencing, because, you know, if somebody's just a good faker or a good actor, they're going to get away with things. And also opens the door for, you know, your unintended biases to come into play, where, you know, you may see people that look like you get lesser sentences than people that don't look like you. And so, you know, I don't particularly like that being used in sentencing guidelines.
Justin Watkins, our legal insider, is with us. Justin, stay on hold. Quick break here. We come back, and we're going to get into the latest. Every week, we're covering the latest with Antonio Brown.
Call Battleborn Injury Lawyers, 702-570-9000, with your questions today.
A second woman is now accusing Antonio Brown of sexual misconduct. Sports Illustrated reports that an artist who painted a mural at Brown's home here in Pittsburgh says that Brown started flirting with her and walked up behind her nearly naked while she was working. She also says that she is still owed money from Brown for some of her artwork.
Right now, it's time for Cofield & Company's legal insider, Justin Watkins, to present the facts. Only on Cofield & Company.
That must be fun news for the newsreaders. CBS Pittsburgh giving the audience updates on AB and all these allegations. Our Vassan department could not find the report about AB and his flatulence, which we'll get to here inside of 5 minutes. Justin Watkins, our legal insider, is with us as we lean on him for the latest with Antonio Brown. So, Adam, now what do we have with the first allegation?
So the first allegation we learned about in a federal lawsuit that was filed last week, there was an accuser, a woman who said she worked as a personal trainer for Brown. Brown says that they were in a consensual relationship. Three separate occasions of sexual assault that she detailed in the lawsuit. Today, we got an announcement from the Allegheny County District Attorney's Office. They said that along with the Allegheny County Police Department, they had made contact with the counsel for the plaintiff in the federal lawsuit. Procedurally, it appears there is a statute of limitations issue in moving forward with any inquiry involving the Allegheny County allegation mentioned in the lawsuit. So essentially, is it just that easy that there is a firm statute of limitations? It was over 2 years ago. There's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, that's right. For the Pittsburgh aspect of it, which is the first conduct, not the allegation of rape, but even if it was the rape one, the rape allegation, 2017, the statute of limitations in Pennsylvania is 2 years. So there's no sort of discretion or wiggle room for a district attorney to choose to prosecute somebody once the allegation is beyond the date, with one exception. There can be exceptions for minors, although I don't even think Pennsylvania has an exception for minors. The different set of rules in every state, but that Antonio Brown still has to worry about is the allegation of rape, which allegedly took place in Florida, would be under a different set of statute of limitations, 4 years for that, and the allegation was it occurred in May of 2018. So they are certainly within the criminal and civil statutes of limitation for that particular allegation.
Is 2 years short, or is that abnormal, or is that a standard, you know, a general standard?
That, so it's a little of all those things. It used to be the standard, 2 years. Sometimes you'd see 4 years. I would say that I'm willing to wager that now, over the course of the last 10 years or so, there has been a movement to extend statute of limitations for sexual assault. Really started arising out of the Catholic Church abuse allegations, and so first came through on minors' claims and how long they had after they reached the age of majority, but then has been extended for all sexual assault victims. And so I would say I'm willing to wager that 2 years is the shortest period of time that you would find in any state in the United States left. As a comparison, in Nevada, it is 20 years, and it's 20 years if you are a minor from the day that you become the age of majority for a civil claim. And there is even another caveat, which is if the allegation is made and an investigation is opened prior to the statute of limitations expiring, there is no statute of limitation.
Well,
if she had made a criminal complaint against him shortly after the incident in 2017, if it were in Nevada, that there would be no statute of limitations on the case whatsoever.
Well, you would think Pennsylvania would have kind of extended it based on the Sandusky stuff that went on a couple years ago, but that is crazy to learn about. In the Antonio Brown case, what we have heard is that there has been ongoing settlement discussions for some time, some undefined period of time that we don't know. If he had been negotiating some sort of settlement and just kind of running out the clock, is that something that could come into play? Or that, like, he's like, okay, I know the statute of limitations is running out. Let's have a discussion about settlement for like 6 months, and then as soon as it runs out, okay, I'm not going to settle. Do what you want to do because I know the limitations is over.
No, there's no such obligation on the part of the opposing party to inform the other party of statute of limitations or to act in good faith to ensure that the alleged victim is protected legally. I will say there's some exceptions around the country for stuff like that. Like, for instance, if you're in a car accident, in the world ideal, if you're in a car accident or you've been injured and you're negotiating with the insurance company without an attorney, and they have to inform you of statute of limitations throughout the process. So there are some very limited exceptions, none of which would ever apply to this situation.
Justin Watkins, our legal insider right here on ESPN Las Vegas, Battleborn Injury Lawyers. You can reach out to him on Twitter at BattlebornJW. Even easier, because you'll probably need more than 280 characters. Call him. Call his firm, 570-9000. The other thing with Antonio Brown, Justin, that we're seeing is this guy either pisses people off and they say he owes them money, or he just doesn't pay them, and this stuff's true. He's getting a lot of people coming at him like, bro, you owe me money. Before I even get into... because we really can't get into details of the case, like he's going to win it or lose it. If someone came to you, like this guy, there's a doctor in the Pittsburgh area, Dr. Victor Prisk. He's filed a lawsuit in Pennsylvania against Antonio Brown, saying that he owes him $11,500 in unpaid fees. When he tells you that, then he goes, you know what? And the other thing I want in there, that guy farted in my face repeatedly. I want that in the lawsuit. What do you tell him? Because that's what he's claiming. Like, why is that in there?
You could put it in there because you may get a jury to agree that that is some form of assault. I think it's it's a stretch in this situation, not because the conduct isn't offensive, it is, but that, like, he, by his own admission in media reports, was like, oh, I thought it was kind of juvenile. But then he continues to treat him as Antonio Brown continues to do this. So, like, clearly he didn't think the conduct was so offensive that he needed to, A, say anything, or B, not be around this person anymore. And so, as a defense attorney in that situation, I would bring that up and say, you know, this is just about the fact, you know, the story's going to be, I'm sure, that this guy wanted to be the exclusive doctor of Antonio Brown, and this lawsuit isn't really about money. Antonio Brown has always paid his bills. This guy wanted a piece of Antonio Brown, and he didn't get it, and now he's just trying to trump up some charges and come after him when he was actually agreeing to do all of this for free because he wanted the publicity and wanted to say he's the doctor that treats Antonio Brown. I can almost, like, I would bet on it that that's the favorite for what the story is going to be on the defense side.
There's some, I guess, breaking news on that aspect of the case, and that Antonio Brown just posted on his Instagram story a copy of the text conversation between him and the doctor last year. This story first came out that Antonio Brown was flatulent in the doctor's office about a year ago on TMZ. The doctor texted Antonio Brown the story and said, according to TMZ, I have a nose of steel with like a three laughing till you cry emoji, Steve's favorite. Antonio Brown going back and forth, damn doc, seeing you and me go viral, I got to come in more now, we're locked in together. The doctor said, indeed, it's funny as blank, I was pretty stoic through the whole thing with all these emojis. Like, clearly the doctor was joking around and laughing about it. As you said, it's not really going to be that relevant anyway necessarily, but Antonio Brown, I guess, came with receipts today.
Yep.
It's just so weird. It's just so, his relationships with all these people is just bizarro. Let's get serious here for a second. Adam, I want you to mention to the audience what's going on with the Pirates reliever, Felipe Vasquez, who, I mean, this is sort of a Chris Hansen type story. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Right? Catching all these creeps, but Chris Hansen. Chris Hansen wasn't there.
No. Felipe Vasquez has been arrested. He apparently, according to the reports, has admitted to police that he met a girl that was 13, that he tried to pursue a sexual relationship with her, that he went to her house and tried to have sex with her, never did, according to him. There's been many nude photos and videos and graphic text messages and other things traded back and forth between them. It's a very, very disturbing case. I want to get into some aspects of it, but the thing that jumped out to me that I wanted to ask your legal opinion on is, he met her at the game in the bullpen. She was sitting near it. He met her there, got her number there.
Wow.
Do the Pirates or baseball have any kind of concern about this?
No. Okay. Well, I mean, what would be the argument that you have to assume that there's sexual predators playing on the field, and therefore the first few rows of every game, of every stadium, can't have children? I mean, like, it's... Yeah, that standard just would not make sense. And
well,
so,
I mean, I think there's, could you make the case that as a part of the community and as the Pirates being an upstanding organization in the community, when they put a player out on the field, you're kind of representing the community, that they're representing you and that maybe they're to be trusted?
Oh my gosh, no. I don't think the Pirates would say that, right? I mean, You get to know what you can get to know about the players, but to act like, well, we've done a full, you know, sexual history of this person, we feel confident that they like adults, and so they are safe to play. Like, that's, I just think that that's unreasonable. It's an unreasonable burden to place upon the team. You would never know that aspect, and it's not like if you ask him in a job interview before you sign him to a contract, hey, you like only people who are over the age of 18, right? That they're going to say, oh, you know what? I'm totally into young kids. And so that's cool, right? I mean, you're never going to discover that absent, you know, I guess, actual criminal history. And we have a recent example of that with my alma mater, right? The pitcher for Oregon State went undrafted, not because of talent, but because when he was 16, he was convicted of molestation charges against a family member, a young girl who was 5 or 6 at the time. And so, you know, with that history in hand, no Major League Baseball team drafted him, even though he was widely considered a first-round talent. So it seems like when people are aware of information, they're going to utilize it, but I don't think it's fair to say they should be the arbiters of, you know, figuring out whether people are sexual deviants or not.
Last one, Justin.
They're not equipped for that.
Yeah, last one. No real easy segue in this one because this is more of a goofy story, but it does involve a younger girl again. This headline from about a week ago, I know Adam Hill was into the story, wants to analyze
it. Take it easy.
Teen disqualified from swim meet victory after referee deemed her suit wedgie inappropriate. What was the story, Adam?
The girl was – her swimsuit was ruled to be in violation of the rules because it showed too much – it essentially the wedgie was too – far up.
Okay.
During
and what was the technical term that the ref used? Was it an
intergluteal?
Intergluteal cleft was showing. All right, we've been through these stories before, Justin, where, you know, last year we had the wrestling deal where a ref's like, I don't like your hair, you know, that's in violation. What about this one? A freaking wedgie can get you disqualified in a swim meet.
So Adam and I had talked about this the other day in sort of passing. And when I read the story, it seemed to imply that there was a rule on the books. And Adam, you have to correct me. If there is a rule that allows for discretion in this regard, then okay. I mean, they've empowered the referees to govern that. If he's just like making up his own rules, you know, the question is it actionable? I think based upon the alleged violation, which has to do with sort of an embarrassing charge, maybe you could get there. But generally speaking, in recreational activities like this, outside of an intent to actually harm the person, it's not going to be actionable.
Justin, we got to close one more time. Hitting on the roads, one of my favorite topics. I want you to mention to people the deal now with the increase of trucks on the road. And we talked about the 15. Man, I've driven the 15 a couple times this week, and after you talked about it last week, I really noticed it. I mean, there are freaking trucks in every single lane, and especially in the left lane now. I mean, this is weird. It's gotten more dangerous. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, this town has always had a ton of trucks. You know, we're, especially on the 15, a major artery between major cities that people are going to use the roads. But for whatever reason, I've noticed an increase in the number of trucks there, and that they seem to use all lanes of the freeway at all times of the day. And I just always want to warn people in that regard, because some of the worst things I've ever seen in my profession and what I do have involved trucking accidents. And specifically, the worst accident I've ever seen was somebody who got into an accident in which they were in between two trucks. There's a truck in front and a truck behind. The woman was killed and her kids were killed. And so be aware out there. And if I can give like one tip of the day, is if you ever find yourself between two trucks, get out of that situation. It's just not safe to be there. If something goes wrong, there's no room for error.
Justin, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, if you're between two trucks, don't ever assume that they can see you. I mean, it's a dangerous situation, and I don't know. I don't know if it's, you know, folks in government, it's just NDOT, but every day now I drive the 15, any time I drive the 15, I can't believe we just put over $1 billion into a road project and the road has become less safe. It's mind-boggling. It's a freaking Grand Prix driving that road. It's completely nuts. John Murray's coming up from the Westgate in about 15 minutes. On the way back, though, we've got interesting case of being courteous and jaywalking.
Call Battle Born Injury Lawyers, 702-570-9000 with your questions today. You're listening to Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
We go behind the counter with John Murray in about 12 minutes. Cofield and Company hanging out here. TI, Golden Circle Sports Bar. We got playoff drive. Baseball, not playoffs yet, but it's very tight for the wild cards, especially in the American League. So keeping an eye on what's going on with the A's. It's always fun doing live radio, and we're not necessarily like performing for an audience because a lot of the people who are walking by, they're just walking by, right?
Yeah.
But when we were just talking about the Antonio Brown story with a doctor who says he owes 11K, AB owes the doctor 11K, and there was a mention of how Antonio Brown kept farting in his face, I was delivering the story, and I said something out loud, like, he kept farting in my face! There were like eight people, like a family walking by, and they're like, what is going on? Why is he yelling about someone farting in his face?
By the way, did you watch the video?
No.
The video's out there of the doctor examining Antonio Brown, and Antonio Brown just continuously farting in his face.
Oh, there was sound, too?
He's not really in his face, though. I mean, I was disappointed.
I thought he was, wasn't he testing for body fat?
Yeah, but he's like, he's kind of in front of him. He's running like a wand over him, basically. And then Brown just keeps doing it, and he keeps chuckling and laughing to his friends and whoever's filming. But it is out there. I was watching it. It's not in his face, as he was saying. It's certainly unprofessional. It's obnoxious.
I mean, it's just a lack of common courtesy.
Of course.
You're just being rude. So let's build on that. I sent you a video. This one went pretty viral. I think it was yesterday or the day before. The video is someone's got a dash cam. They're driving. Some old guy starts, just kind of juts out and is walking in front of the car. The car appears to be going, I don't know, you know, maybe 25 or 30 miles an hour. Luckily, the car sees the guy because he's jaywalking. The car stops, like, well before the pedestrian. The pedestrian, as he's jaywalking, is looking into the car, like, mean mugging the driver.
Yeah, staring him down.
He's not paying attention, so then the ultimate justice is his foot hits the curb, and then he rams straight into a pole.
Yeah, like a light pole, a very heavy one.
Yes.
It was perfect justice.
It's amazing. But the issue here of the, you're jaywalking, but you're annoyed?
Oh, you see it all the time. It's so
well, obnoxious. We certainly see it here on the Las Vegas Strip.
Oh, of course.
Where we don't have the pedestrian bridges, people are just complete animals. And listen, we want to contribute to the economy, so I choose not to employ my favorite pastime, which is?
The horn?
Yes. And I also choose not to plow them over. But, like, in this case, I don't know what goes through, because there's always this pedestrian-driver battle. But I don't know what's going through the pedestrian mind anymore. While we're not supposed to be doing it, do you know how many people are on their phones and looking down, or as we were talking about the other day, you know, we mentioned that donut chicken sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
That KFC's got, and we harkened back to the days of the double down, and I was talking about eating the double down, which was this sandwich with two chicken breasts with bacon in the middle, and there was like, there's no bun, and it was hot as Hades, and I was talking about eating that sandwich while driving.
Well,
if there's a pedestrian who jaywalks in front of me, like I'm being irresponsible by eating the scalding hot chicken sandwich, but like my legs are not going to react the right way because that's what I'm driving with, my legs at that point. Like, you're dead.
Well, we had an MMA fighter get in some trouble just the other day for posting a video. He has his video game console set up on the dash. He's driving along as he goes. Now, it's a self-driving car.
Oh, really?
But at the same time, like, he literally is not paying attention. He's on his phone, on a computer, and on a game console, and filming as he's driving along. Like, that's what you're kind of dealing with now on the roads. Now, again, I'm not even faulting him. He's in a self-driving car. That's kind of why they're made. But you also have that scenario. But I think it's why do pedestrians feel this way? Because that expression of pedestrians always have the right of way, and you leave out the part when you're crossing where you're supposed to cross.
Right.
Like, you don't have the right to just run out in the road and people have to stop. That applies to when you're in a crosswalk.
Yeah. And I'll admit I'm getting incredibly heartless. Like, if I had watched that video and the guy had just been smashed.
Good.
I don't know. I know. It's really bad. It's just awful. I mean, actually, I saw it happen. It was about 2 years ago. Saw it happen sort of at dusk one night right over on Charleston. some guy is just sauntering across the street, and we're talking three lanes across on each side on Charleston. And I'm like, I can see him because he's sort of coming towards me. He's not on my side of the road, but he's, you know, the oncoming traffic, he's walking across real slow, and I think they have a limited view, and he just, I mean, he got rammed at like 40 miles an hour.
You see it.
I mean, and I'll tell you what, I looked and I was like, yeah, I got to get somewhere. Not like he fell in front of my car, but I moved on.
Yeah.
Well, which is incredibly mean, but, and I'm sure the people who hit him felt terrible, but they were in no way at fault.
Maybe you should have stayed and told the police.
There are other witnesses.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Right.
I could have contributed to the society, or at least the aid of the driver who I'm sure felt devastated.
It's also, in this case, the guy is walking incredibly slow, staring down the driver who had no need to stop. You could have just run the guy over. But just staring down the driver like, dude, you're in the wrong. How do you not understand that you're in the wrong here? And I see it all the time when I'm out. Like, first of all, please, at least give me the pretend hurry. Even if you're not actually hurrying, give me the pretend hurry, please, or else I will try to run you over.
No, you won't. You're meek.
I am.
You know what I want? I just want, give me a wave. Give me a wave. You know what? I recognize that I was being a horse's ass. Here's a wave.
No, the wave and the pretend hurry is, that combination is a must.
Right.
That's a requirement. Don't stare the person down. You're in the wrong.
Week 3 in the National Football League, from a betting standpoint, is one of the most incredible we've ever seen. We got to find out what's going on behind the counter with John Murray on the way in less than 5.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
Time to check in with John Murray over at the Westgate Superbook USA. Every Sunday morning, we're out there with the Sunday Pro Football Preview Show, talking to Jay Cornegay, Adam, or myself, starting at 8 a.m. John, how crazy has it been this week? Just people in long lines to bet the Jets plus 23 and the Dolphins plus 21.5.
You think there's people lined up to do that, Steve? I think they're going to be coming in on the other side. So far, we've had 8 people bet straight on the Jets, 2 people bet straight on the Miami Dolphins.
Well, that's good. No lines.
Well, I assume that they did that on their mobile devices.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Why would anyone possibly? the bets on games like that will come in on Sunday morning. Those are both 10 a.m. kicks Sunday. I'm sure we'll have long lines then.
From a volume standpoint, do those games bring in the least amount of money of the week?
I wouldn't say least amount. Okay. The least amount will be between two teams nobody cares about, usually, is how it works. But people don't really like to lay these huge point spreads. People don't really like to lay 21.5, 22.5 points. They'd rather lay 6 points on a road favorite. Like, the kind of game the public will love this week would be the Rams -3 on the road against Cleveland, and certainly the Bears -4 at Washington, the Monday night game. The books are going to be stuck big on those two dogs.
How many New England moneyline parlays will there be? How many people will throw them on there?
Not as many as you would think. I mean, I say that, and I just pulled it up, and there's a lot of them. but I wouldn't have thought that many. It's minus 5,000 on the Patriots, minus 4,000 on Dallas. It really isn't going to add too much value to your ticket. I can tell you guys there's a lot more moneyline plays and parlays on Green Bay and on Kansas City than there are on those two teams. But I will say, a little bit more than I thought there would be so far. I'll admit that.
The Pats and Cowboys minus the points will be on parlay tickets. I'll give you one from our buddy down south part of town. Jimmy Vaccaro tweeted out a ticket. $10,000 four-team parlay. Alabama -38.5. Georgia -14. Pats -23. Cowboys -21.5. $10,000 to win $110,000.
Yeah, if that parlay hits, it's going to be an ugly weekend all over town. Jimmy V got to be the best Twitter follower in the gambling or Twitter follow in the gambling space, right? I mean, his Twitter account's awesome.
I would recommend at Vegas Murray.
I don't really tweet that much. All I really do is retweet to promote my own appearances and get all the attention on myself.
I mean, that's what Twitter's for.
So Twitter is all about just getting all the eyeballs on yourself?
I think it's for promotion, sure.
Oh, promotion. Okay. Well, then I'm doing a great job. Then I'm an excellent Twitter follow.
You complain about field goal kicking.
That's true. I wouldn't say complain. I like to laugh at it, Steve. It's funny. But what Pat Narduzzi did on Saturday was objectively funny. How could you not find that funny?
Tell people what he did.
He kicked a field goal on fourth and goal from the 1 yard line, down 17-10, with like 7 minutes left in the game. And then the media did a good job. They called him out in the post game press conference on it, and he said it was the right move because they needed two scores to win the game. It was tremendous. And the kid missed the field goal. That was the best part.
Perfect. I mean, that's how it works out. What about, are you surprised by the fact that Kingsbury has been so conservative in red zone situations?
I would say extremely surprised. You talk about a guy that got this job because what? He was considered this innovative offensive mind. He was coaching in the Big 12 at Texas Tech, a team that had no defense but usually put a lot of points on the board. I mean, to me, he'd be one of the last coaches in the league I'd expect to be kicking field goals from inside the 5 yard line. I'd put him up there with Belichick and McVay and Sean Payton. Those are the guys that I would think would be the last people to do that, and I would have thought Kingsbury would be in that group.
Let's talk about some adjusted numbers because of quarterback injuries. San Fran now 6.5 against the Steelers. Do you think that's the right number? I'm talking from your football opinion, and where do you think people are going to come in on this game with the Steelers getting 6.5 against the Niners?
Well, they're going to bet the Niners. Niners are 2-0. They've been playing well. Mason Rudolph, no one really knows what to make of him. Yeah, I think the adjustment from Roethlisberger to Rudolph is worth about a touchdown, and the look-ahead line on this game was somewhere in the neighborhood of Pick'em. So for it going to a 6.5-7 seems about right to me. And it's funny, though. We're going to actually need the Steelers in that game as a big underdog, which is certainly not what we would have expected before the season.
What would you say Teddy Bridgewater in relation to Drew Brees is worth? Would it be upwards of 5 or 6 points? Because right now it's Seattle -4.5 against the Saints. So would this have been like Saints on the road -1.5?
Yeah, I think the Saints would have been a small favorite. And the jump from Brees to Bridgewater is not as drastic as the one in Pittsburgh, because Bridgewater is a more competent backup QB. New Orleans can also utilize Taysom Hill more. They can run more packages that get him the ball. I know Bridgewater looked really bad on Sunday, but he was kind of thrust into that game on the road against the Rams. Now he's going to have a full week to prepare for this game. I can tell you guys, everybody's betting Seattle here. The ticket count's like 10-1 on Seattle. I think there might be a little bit of value on the Saints. Bridgewater is probably a little bit more effective of a backup than people are giving him credit for right now.
Does it matter to you guys setting numbers that the Saints haven't announced the starting quarterback?
Are you saying that they're going between Bridgewater and Hill? Is that what you're saying?
That they're going to play two quarterbacks, or
it doesn't matter from our perspective. I mean, we assume the whole time that they were going to run a lot of packages with Hill. I don't know why they wouldn't. And Bridgewater will certainly be in there for most of the passing situations.
The Baltimore Kansas City game to me is by far the best game of the week, the most fun, the most intriguing. Could have the most implications at the end of the year. Will that be the most popular game at the window?
I don't think it'll be the most popular game at the window, only because it's at 10 a.m. You know, this game was the Sunday night game is almost always the biggest bet game of the week, and I think we'll see a lot of the Monday night game will be really big because everybody loves the Bears this year. We'll take a ton of money on the Bears. So I think it's very possible it could be the most heavily bet game at 10 a.m., but it won't do as much as the Sunday or Monday night games.
What's the adjustment between Eli Manning and Daniel Jones? Tampa is 6.5. What's Manning worth?
Yeah, I don't think he's worth anything. You know, at this point, I mean, honestly, at this point in his career, is he worth anything? The only thing is we don't know what Daniel Jones is yet. So we don't know yet if this is something where the numbers should actually go the other way because Eli is so bad, because we don't know yet if Daniel Jones is also very, very bad.
You guys still have Zona and Carolina on the board. I'm seeing at least on one site that you guys have 2.5 Carolina favored on the road. That can't be with Cam Newton built in, right?
No, we got that game off the board. I mean, we had to do a Super Contest number. We put up the Super Contest numbers at 3 o'clock today. We made Arizona a 3-point favorite in that game because we do think Cam Newton is out. What I've seen on Twitter definitely makes me think that we're not going to see Cam Newton play this week, and we think the Cardinals are a short favorite in this game with Kyle Allen and their quarterback for the Panthers.
Was that number available early in the week, the Panthers' favorite?
I think you could have bet here -2.5, -3 earlier in the week, but the game's been off the board with the injury rumors surrounding Mr. Newton.
What's your take in general, the way the NFL has handled the backup quarterback position? I mean, this is Armageddon trying to book these games. Once the starter goes down, it's like a whole different team.
Yeah, I mean, there's just not enough money in the salary cap for these teams to have two good quarterbacks for the most part, so it's definitely a challenge for us, but we've got a pretty good idea of what each of these QBs is worth, unless they're like, I thought the one last week was one of the trickier ones just because we don't know what Gardner Minshew is. You know, we really don't know. We haven't seen enough of Gardner Minshew to really assign a point value difference between him and Nick Foles. Whereas with Mason Rudolph and with Teddy Bridgewater, it's a little bit easier. We know what those guys are, and we've got a pretty good idea of what the difference is.
Anyone on the show want to take the Raiders plus 8.5, 9?
We've seen a little bit of money come in on the Raiders in that game. We're going to need the Raiders. There'll be Vikings included in a lot of money line parlays and a lot of teasers. So we'll end up needing Oakland by kickoff. But I'm okay with needing a team to cover 8.5 points against Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is awful.
We talk a lot about, you know, maybe overvaluing individual players in terms of line, and somebody says, oh, this guy's out. What? That's going to change the line 6 or 7 points, and they're completely wrong. Usually only quarterbacks can have a major impact on the line. But yeah, a guy like Trent Brown in Oakland, who didn't practice today, highest paid right tackle in the league, and that offensive line has been way better than we expect, is a guy like that who might not really draw the attention of a lot of people, but might be a massive impact on the game. Does that have an impact on you guys setting
a number? There are some non-quarterbacks that are going to affect the point spread. You talk about maybe a half a point here or there. There are some really high-end players like Aaron Donald, DeAndre Hopkins, like the really elite players in the non-quarterback position that might be worth 1 to 1.5 points. But anytime you're looking at a point spread difference of 4.5, 5, 6 points, that would only be a quarterback. No other position could impact the number by that much.
John Murray on the horn, Superbook USA. All right, I want your bookmaker opinion of this news out of Pennsylvania. JVT pointed this out to us, John Von Tobel. Parks Casino in PA has reposted some of the award odds for baseball, like American League Cy Young. So Justin Verlander on the board is minus 500. Garrett Cole
is
plus
250. Justin Verlander is minus 500? I would have added a zero to that number.
JBT is making a strong case that he thinks Cole actually by the numbers. And if the nerds, you know, really go by the numbers, that Cole actually has better numbers. But here's the one I want to ask you about. Because this to me suggests that the book has a position and they need help to get off the position in terms of liability. Mike Trout, AL MVP, is minus 1,000. They can't be courting action on that, can they? And Bregman's the next choice at 10 to 1. They're right? They must need other money.
Wait, what's the Bregman number?
Bregman is 10 to 1.
And Trout's minus 1,000?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds to me like they're trying to get some money on Alex Bregman. I can tell you guys, we've got a big liability here on Mike Trout at the Superbook. But, you know, I'm pretty sure, and Randy Blum handles all the baseball here, so he gets all the credit for all that stuff, but I'm pretty sure that they make us close the Cy Young and the MVP on a certain date that's passed for Nevada Gaming.
Well,
so I don't think that we would even be allowed to do that, even if we wanted to. I'm not going to speak for Pennsylvania. I don't know the regulations there, but it sounds like they're trying to write some money on Bregman. Should Mike Trout really be a slam dunk MVP candidate? You're talking about a guy that's not even going to play the last few weeks of the season on a team that never even sniffed the playoffs. I mean, I know his numbers are very good, but it doesn't really seem like he should be such a slam dunk for the MVP to me. I thought Verlander was pretty safely the AL Cy Young, honestly, but I'm not going to pretend like I've been paying close attention to that race.
Last one, a college football game. Where do you think the money's going to come in on Wisconsin and Michigan? And do you think Harbaugh's team is going to compete and potentially pull off the outright upset?
Well, the money's going to come in on Wisconsin. And we talk about this all the time, guys, where people always bet on what they just saw. Michigan is off to a very well-reported on slow start. Can we say that? And so far, we're seeing most of the tickets on Wisconsin, about 3-1 on Wisconsin. You guys know I love Jim Harbaugh. I can't really go against Coach Harbaugh. But there's been nothing positive to say about Michigan so far this season. So that's a stay-away game for me.
What do we got coming up this week on your award-winning podcast, Kelly and Murray?
Kelly, well, when Kelly gets here, which could be really any time, you know, there's really no telling.
Oh, no. Do we have an issue with someone
Kelly
being tardy? What's going on here?
No, it's not tardy. Kelly is just, she's doing so many things. She's like a female Adam Hill. She's got like 19 jobs. So it's hard for her to find hours in the day to fit me into her schedule. Well, we're going to break down the card. Going to give out some college football picks. Kelly was white hot on college football last week, guys. Come on, give her some credit.
All right, repeat that line. Kelly in Vegas is like a female Adam Hill.
In the sense that they both work like a million different jobs.
No. We need you to say it so we have a drop for the future and a rejoin. Come on.
I already said it.
You
should have quality editors over there that can chop it out there, Steve.
Well,
I already said it once.
You really know behind-the-scenes action at Lotus. You nailed it there.
As an avid listener of the podcast, John, yeah. is it still Sober September?
That's a good question. I mean, I remember a couple of weeks ago we were recording, and she was really complaining about it. And I was like, Kelly, it's like September 10th. You've got like 20 days left. Kelly and Murray, I hope that people enjoy listening to it, because I can tell you guys, the recording process is no piece of cake.
I was going to say, because you don't enjoy doing it. So
no, I don't enjoy it at all, but I hope that people out there, and they tell me it's in iTunes now, so it should be easy to find. I hope you guys enjoy listening to it. It is a painful recording process, but I love Kelly.
John, we appreciate it. We'll see you on Sunday.
All right, guys. Thanks.
There you go. One of the bosses over at Superbook USA inside the Westgate, John Murray. We come back here to TI. We're at the Golden Circle Sports Bar. Some discussion about these NFL teams that appear to just be incredibly broken and who can save them. What coach can come in to save a few of these organizations? Maybe it's someone from the collegiate ranks?
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas.